Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA, coming to you from Amsterdam and the SCCE Basic Compliance and Ethics Academy here. By happy coincidence, Northrop Grumman's ethics team was having a conference in the same hotel at the same time, so we're able to sit down today and talk with Roz Bliss. Roz is the Manager of Global Integrity for Northrop Grumman. Roz, thanks for taking the time away from your meeting to talk to us today.
It's a pleasure, Adam. Thank you for asking.
So we're going to spend a little time talking about what actually Roz is here for, which is how to have a successful internal ethics and compliance team meeting. So first, let me ask you, what are some of the ingredients for a successful meeting?
Well, Adam, it depends on your audience. And I think that from an international standpoint, what is really makes it successful is to state your purpose up front. Put it in a meeting notice, put it in when you organize the meeting, and also manage your expectations. So let them know what it is that you want to accomplish, and then be realistic with what can really be done. Another thing is to know your audience. What I have found is with our international group that depending on where the participants are from, it depends on how you plan out your meeting. So for example, if some of your participants are from the Middle East, they like to spend some time talking about maybe family, maybe talking about common friends. They want to allow time to build relationships. A little bit different than the way Americans typically do it, where they start the meeting off on time. So knowing that, you need to be flexible, that the conversation can go in a lot of different directions, and just plan that time in, which is part of managing your expectations. Also, be considerate if this is a virtual meeting, we're doing a webinar, be considerate of the time differences and know that it's hard to get a global audience in one meeting, and that you really may need to build your meeting into two different segments, maybe early in the morning for the Middle East, the UK, and the EU, and then maybe do the exact same meeting in the afternoon for Asia and for teams that are in Australia. And also keep to the scheduled meeting time. So if you're allowing an hour and a half for this meeting, be respectful of your participants and try to end on time.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I just want to add two points. One, it's one of the things, I just wrote something for our website about how to give a bad presentation at one of our conferences, and noted the fact if you really want to give a bad one, go over, because people have emails to answer and pile up. And one thing I will add from personal negative experience, and it was my fault, you know, when you said respect the time zones and, you know, be aware when you do it. Also, one thing that's I didn't think of is just because the United States has shifted to daylight savings time doesn't mean the rest of the world made the switch on the same day. So I ended up scheduling what was going to be a late evening meeting for me with someone to a very late evening call for me because I lost track of that difference. So let's talk about the planning process. Who should be involved in the planning?
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, the people that have the same vision that you do and want to achieve the same objectives. But I find that involve your opposition, and then that neutralizes any problems that you may have down the line. So if you have if you have people that may not be on the same page with you, bring them into the fold, get their opinions, and see how you can address that up front. So really, it's including the key contributors, and then, you know, the people that you think would be most likely to oppose what you're doing.
Interesting. And that leads to a good question, because you've already answered one of them, which is, I was going to ask, what are some of the pitfalls you found along the way? Obviously, anticipating there are people going to be in opposition, and it's a great way to sort of mitigate that. But so what are some of the other pitfalls you found?
Oh, there are many. There are many. If you're dealing with a universe or a global audience, one of the things that I learned is that as Americans, we tend to be very prompt. And this is not a global attribute. So as Americans, if we schedule a meeting, for example, at 10 o'clock, by 4 minutes after, we're pinging our people saying, you know, where are you? And by like maybe 7-8 minutes, it's like, it's okay, we'll reschedule. It's, you know, I understand. And what I found is that The French sometimes don't even show up until 15 minutes after. The Australians are very laid back. The Middle East, they show up somewhat on time, but they don't like agendas. And that's another pitfall, is setting up an agenda and keeping directly to the time in your agenda. And they think that discussion should flow organically, so forcing a conversation into an agenda in a time frame doesn't always work. If you're doing a webinar and you have a global audience, you'll find that in many of the groups there's not a lot of participation, and that's because there's some shyness. English is their second language, so you're not going to have as much participation as you would if everybody spoke the same language. And then there's also virtual challenges. So if you're online with a global audience, I ask participants to mute their phone if there's some background noises that are distracting. I know I've had conference calls where someone's bird is squawking in the background, or someone's dog, or, you know, the doorbell rings, or they're... And I think the best one was when somebody was yelling, "I'm on this boring meeting, but it'll be over soon," but everybody heard it. So I always ask them, just mute the phone until they're ready to speak.
That's great. And that's, you know, one of those surprises that also makes it fun in a weird way. But are there any other surprises of the types of elements in a meeting that work better than might be expected, going to sort of the other side of the coin?
Well, when we're talking about ethics and compliance, what I have found recently is that people are curious about ethics in other countries, and even within their own country in the news. So I like to bring in current events. It's not hard to find ethics issues in the newspaper or online, and sometimes that breaks the ice in the beginning. It's like, did you see this story about, you know, what someone did? And there's just universal interest, and if you can get others to share their stories as well, it always makes it interesting. And then also what I found works well is just, you know, listen carefully. Listen really carefully to what people are saying and encourage engagement by asking questions.
It may also be good to listen to what they're not saying.
Exactly.
You know, if the room suddenly goes silent, you may have found a sensitive area. So the meeting's happened, it's been a success or not. What's the best follow-up for the meeting to make sure that the value doesn't just stop when they walk out the door at the end of the day or the hour and a half?
Well, what I always do is send out a thank you to all that participated, and I usually include the meeting slides and include all those who were unable to participate so they still feel as part of a group. So I follow up with a brief recap, any attachments that we may have referenced during the meeting so that they have it. I also will post that on a share site that we have. So sometimes if somebody needs to look something up that they think they heard or they'd like to use it as part of another briefing, it's available to them. I will schedule a follow-up session if necessary. And another way of just staying in touch is just sharing the best practices. So sometimes people come away from a meeting and will share with their team what was talked about in the meeting. And it's always great if they allow others to use that as well. So it's just another way of just staying in touch and reinforcing the messages.
Well, let me conclude by thanking you for sharing your best practices with us. Apropos of that, I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA, saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspectives.